know you can't meditate. If you a freak, then you come along with me. And I know what you came here to do. Now, let me see you get loose. It's going down for real.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Good Friday, I suppose, out there to all the members of the Dog Pound listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm with you here as we get ready to break down what was, again, a good first half, a non-existent second half for the Cleveland Browns as they fall to Cincinnati 31-10, their third straight loss of more than 14 points, as the Browns now are 2-7 on the season. And then you watch the game and you said to yourself at halftime, I actually thought I felt better going into halftime, as strange as it sounds, of this game than I did of the Arizona game when they kind of scored later on and it seemed as though they were making some moves. But now you go into halftime down 14-10. Johnny Manziel leads a 92-yard drive on that one. And then you look in the second half and you don't have a first down until after the blocked punt by Marlon Moore when the game was completely out of reach. No offense once again in the second half of this game, and it seems that opponents are making adjustments at halftime that the Browns are not making. The Browns over the last three games down 55-3 in the second half, and that is not going to win in the National Football League, period, point blank, end of story.
Yeah, and for me, I'm just utterly disappointed, in shock, and I know for a lot of people, understanding where we were at as a team, their aspirations of going into Cincinnati and replicating what we did last year, it is very clear that the Cincinnati Bengals are a different team, in almost one full year with Andy Dalton very confident with the healthy weapons offensively around him. You've got the resurgence of Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, the maturity that Jim Nance and Phil Simms talked about on the TV broadcast about those players. The defensive backs did a great job covering up, our weapons and playing great football. I think, Pac-Man Jones and what he means to that back end. All in all, it would, and I listened, Nathan, to, some of your post-game videos and analysis on ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. And we had to go in there and play a perfect football game, and it was nothing close. And just as I said, the Cincinnati Bengals are a different team 1 year removed from, the great win on Thursday Night Football last year. So are the Cleveland Browns. We're a different football team. You saw fight in us early, and I think a lot of that was the spark that we all expected out of Johnny Manziel and players wanting to play for him as their quarterback and their leader. But I felt like at halftime there was nothing left in the tank. There was nothing we could do to stop them, and I know that the NFL Network continued to show the visual of, Andy Dalton was 8 of 10 at one point. Andy Dalton had completed 10 in a row, including a touchdown pass. And we couldn't stop them. We couldn't stop the run again. And offensively, I felt that the Cincinnati Bengals were just more well-coached than I had seen in a long time, and they truly had our number.
They did. And, Johnny, I thought, to me, and we'll get into this, and really one of the Ohio Business Machine hot topics of the day is, should Johnny Manziel be your quarterback the rest of the season? And I say absolutely.
I agree.
Thought he certainly showed enough to be your quarterback. What was that, Matt?
I agree with you for the first time ever. It's at this point right now, you're 2-7. What good is going with Josh McCown saying that he gives us the best chance to win when your chance to win statistically is so low to begin with? Does it really matter at this point?
It certainly seems that way, and it certainly seems a little bit pointless at this point to do anything other than play Johnny, who I thought did provide some spark. Obviously, in the second half, they couldn't get anything going. But back to your point, if the Cleveland Browns wanted to go into Cincinnati and hang the first loss on the Cincinnati Bengals, they needed to play an almost flawless game. And yeah, Taylor Gabriel dropped a touchdown in the first half. And I honestly thought the momentum turning point, and it may sound silly, was the first down play. Johnny hit Taylor Gabriel for what should have been an 18-yard gain. And not only did he not catch it, he didn't even get his hands on the ball, and it bounced off of his kneecap,
yep,
which I just don't even understand how that's possible in the NFL. Gabriel, 3 drops on the day, and you got to help your quarterback out. And I think one of the things that we saw with the injuries to Andrew Hawkins and Brian Hartline, not that they have been anything special this year, none of them averaging even 30 yards receiving a game, was you saw the deficiencies in terms of the lack of talent at the wide receiver position. If you're going with a guy like Johnny Manziel, you need to surround him with the talent at wide receiver, because what he's going to do is extend plays. And he did extend some plays. And you saw there was a perfect example of one where he got out of the pocket and tried to hit Travis Benjamin, who's had a great season, on a comebacker. If that was Mike Evans or a big-bodied receiver, they box out, they go get it, and Johnny Manziel allows you to do things but needs the talent around him. He is not Tom Brady, who's going to stand in the pocket and pick you apart with precision. I will say I thought his placement of the ball was much better than it had been in the past. I thought his velocity and accuracy, specifically on the run, was much better than it had been in the past. He did look calmer and less frenetic to me. And I thought it was interesting that after he leads them on a 92-yard drive, on which the touchdown was a play that he made happen, the 25-yarder to Gary Barnage was a play that he made happen, the big pass to Duke Johnson was literally, again, a play that he made happen, that Mike Pettine goes into the halftime reporter and says, he needs to calm down and stay in the pocket more. You're not winning from the pocket because, A, you couldn't keep the Cincinnati Bengals out of the pocket.
Right.
I thought our offensive line had a rough day once again. And, B, that's not what he does, nor do you have the receivers with the requisite skill set to do that consistently. If anything stood out to me on tape from this offensive standpoint, you talk about stagnation, missed opportunities in the drop passes, and there was zero separation. When did you see a wide receiver on our team wide open?
Never.
You didn't.
No.
Only after Johnny broke into a scramble drill and things broke down and there was chaos did you see wide receivers from the Browns open. So I thought that was disappointing, and I thought defensively the inability to get off the field on third down was disappointing. There was one play that stood out in my mind that just was kind of a microcosm of the season. I believe it was 3rd and 11 in the first half, and it may have been even on their first scoring drive. 3rd and 11, and they ended up completing a pass on a crosser to Marvin Jones. It was 3rd and 11. Yes, it was on their very first drive. 3rd and 11 from the Cincinnati 49. Andy Dalton passed short middle to Marvin Jones to the Cleveland 22 for 29 yards. Do you remember that play?
I do remember that play.
Do you remember who was in man-to-man coverage on Marvin Jones on that play?
Was it Ibrahim Campbell, was it not?
Armonte Bryant. They blitzed Ibrahim Campbell. They blitzed Kaywan Williams. And on 3rd and 11, on the opening drive of the game, you somehow get yourself in a situation where Armonte Bryant's trying to run man-to-man on a crosser with a wide receiver?
Yeah, that's
stealing. Unacceptable.
That's stealing.
That's unacceptable. Too many things happening. Coaching errors in terms of too many things happening in terms of physical errors, mental errors, going off sides on a fourth down, whether he says he was or he wasn't.
He was. He wasn't off sides. He was lined up in the neutral zone.
Too many mistakes for a team that can ill afford to continue to make them. And that's why you sit at right now 2-7. That's why you are, 2-12 in your last 14 games? That's who the Cleveland Browns are right now. And until it changes, they are going to have a tough time getting off the schneid. The only positive I saw out of it, there were a couple. Number one, Justin Gilbert played some cornerback. I loved seeing that. And didn't stand out. A.J. Green, he was matched up with A.J. Green on multiple third downs and was not beaten soundly. He looked comfortable out there. I thought Johnny showed some flashes. It's time to play the young guys. It's time to see what they can do. And I almost think it's time to simplify the scheme on defense and just go back to traditional gap assignments and allow people to be in situations to succeed. When you put Armonte Bryant on 3rd and 11, man-to-man on Marvin Jones, you are not in any way, shape, or form putting your defense in a chance to succeed.
No, and when you referenced young players, the one player that I believe, you know, moving forward, and even in the last three football games going back, Duke Johnson, why does he disappear in the second half of football games when I thought
yes. Forget Duke Johnson. Why did everybody disappear in the second half of the game?
Well, I get that, but I don't mean disappear like why doesn't he have any production, but why is he not on the football field? And the few times that, you know, the NFL Network showcased some of the blitzes or the pressure that the Cincinnati Bengals were bringing, Duke Johnson steps up in the hole and doesn't whiff on his guy, sticks his nose in there, and allows Johnny to feel protected in the pocket initially. And then guys are going to win because you're picking up a linebacker, and Duke's not the largest of running backs out there. But it was just Isaiah Crowell. And I think Crowell, as we can see, ran angry last night. Ran guys over.
He looked good.
He looked like an NFL running back, which we hadn't seen out of anybody in a long time. And because of the circumstances, you don't feed him the ball. And the shocking fact while we're talking about running backs is one rush in the second half of this football game. And one other crazy stat that I did very quickly, as the Cleveland Browns possessed the ball for over 9 minutes in the first quarter, after the first quarter, The Cleveland Browns possessed the ball for 5 minutes and 51 seconds in the second quarter, 3 minutes, 21 seconds in the third quarter, and 5 minutes and 4 seconds in the fourth quarter. That's 14 minutes and 16 seconds for the remaining three quarters of the football game. And yet, at halftime, the score is 14-10.
Yeah. Yes, indeed it was. I got to tell you, when you look at this game and you went into half and you felt like you had some momentum there and come out in the second half, the reason that you didn't get a lot of Duke Johnson, you really didn't get a lot of anybody, was because they couldn't go ahead and get a first down. They didn't get one first down. And that's a problem. Taylor Gabriel's drop, I really thought it was a massive play and just kind of took the wind out of the sails. You certainly could feel that on the sideline. And do they need to maybe have more mental resolve than that? Yes, but you talk about time of possession, third quarter, Bengals 11 minutes, 39 seconds, Browns 3 minutes, 21 seconds. I mean, that is, you don't even understand. You can articulate that better than anybody else. And then in the fourth quarter, 10 minutes to 5 minutes. In that third quarter, the Bengals ran for 44 yards. Andy Dalton was 7 of 7 for 72 yards. He moved the ball at will. The Browns generated 20 yards total in the entire quarter. That's it. And you talked about no Duke Johnson. They couldn't get into any kind of a flow. Isaiah Crowell in the first half touched the ball 11 times and gave you more than 60 total yards. He looked good catching it out of the backfield. He ran angry and was decisive. He showed elusiveness in the open field. Duke's two catches came on the one drive where he had the two catches for 38 yards, ultimately ending up in the touchdown. But after that, it was as if those two guys, that part of the game was gone. And now you don't know how it would have played out because the game wasn't out of hand. You just couldn't stay on the field. That was the issue. It was only 17-10. They held them. They limited them in that third quarter where I gave you those stats for the Bengals. Guess what? They scored 3 points.
Right. And that's my whole point. And obviously, I know Johnny's starting for the second time this season and doesn't have the rapport. But I would have had no problem, Nathan, with checking the ball down to Duke Johnson in a little bit of space and allowing him to make a guy miss, you know, break a tackle and run out of an angle. That would just get us one first down, and I thought that would have calmed Johnny down and not felt him to need to throw the football down the field consistently. And I know he's trying to prove everyone so wrong that he can be a pocket passer and that he can keep his eyes down the field and all that great stuff. But at some point in that football game, I think it's a matter of survival. It's, I can't do it all, you know, and I would feel that a back checking out of the backfield and just dumping it down to him, you know, for a 3-yard pass and allowing him to get to 2nd and 6 or 2nd and 4 and give us a more advantageous 2nd and 3rd down yardage as opposed to constantly being behind the 8-ball and having Johnny, you know, most likely having the mentality that he has to throw the football down the field.
Yeah, and I think it also gives a little bit of help. You know, you can get him in the situations where he was thriving. Clearly was out of the pocket. From in the pocket, give him reads low to high. I felt like too often he was trying to read high to low, and he wasn't having the time to do that because, number one, the guys high were not getting open or separation, and then the offensive line was not giving him any time whatsoever to throw the football. I mean,
right.
You look at how often he was under duress, and for the record, this was a game, and I know you watched it on TV, but certainly on the field, it didn't seem like they went out of their way to blitz all that often.
They did not.
In fact, in the second half, they pretty much stopped blitzing because they knew if they could just keep him in the pocket, they were able to get pressure anyway. He was under pressure 50% of his dropbacks.
Yep.
They only blitzed 9 times
in
the game.
Yeah, and if they brought a blitz, the way it looked at least on television, I'll have to go back and watch it, is they'd only bring one more defender. So they're only bringing 5. You know, so it wasn't like some overwhelming all-out blitz. And lastly, this is, again, I'm going to go back and watch it, and I might be, you know, talking a little preemptive before I go back and watch it again. But it looked to me, we ran an awful lot of outbreaking routes on the edges, which are long throws. And I know for a young quarterback, you know, throwing the ball across the middle or having confidence doing that and making the right reads is sometimes difficult. But I thought, as I watched those replays and you know, with Johnny throwing the ball out of bounds or Johnny on an overthrow or Johnny on a drop pass, if you look at the Gabriel catch that you're talking about, was an in-breaking curl. Those in-breaking routes, Duke Johnson swinging all the way across the formation, and he had to get into Johnny's sight line for Johnny to deliver the football, but Duke was open along the middle of the field the entire day. And I just don't understand why, you know, why we don't go to the sideline and see those voids that I see as a defensive player. That can we not scheme anything to take advantage of those? Because we were a few first downs and to slowing that game down, to not, you know, letting the Bengals get as comfortable as they got in the second half to see through their game plan and get into those, you know, the reverse plays, or, you know, they've been running the in route, and then they run like the slant and go with Eifert. If you're keeping that game close and you're possessing that football, Hugh Jackson doesn't have an opportunity to get to that play on his call sheet. And I thought that worked. That worked against us.
And you knew that sluggo was coming.
But, but here's my and you know what?
Right before that play, I said they're going to run a sluggo.
And I'm sorry.
It's going to be wide open.
But okay, we've hit Benjamin how many times on that backside slant off the zone read, which is exactly what Dalton. Why don't we do that with Benjamin and try to catch somebody one time for a chunk play? You know,
the last time we did that, I believe, was against the Raiders.
He almost gets his head
ripped. Just overthrew it.
His head almost gets ripped off every time he runs that slant because they know it's coming, but it's very difficult to stop. And you like getting into second and two, second and seven, and a completion and a confidence builder. But at some point, they're gonna get you know, a little aggressive, the same way Tremont did, and jumped it. And you got a guy like Travis Benjamin who can catch that football and make a game changing touchdown type of run.
Yeah, listen, at the end of the day, in a game where Joe Hayden didn't play, A.J. Green, 4 catches for 53 yards, he didn't kill you. Eifert killed you with the 3 touchdowns. Marvin Jones killed you.
Yeah.
And I thought, honestly, in coverage for the Browns, I thought they did a fine job for the most part. Instead, in terms of the young corner on wide receivers, the guy who was picked on the most was Tremont Williams, 6 catches, 98 yards. He was targeted 8 times and gave up a touchdown. K'Wan Williams was targeted 5 times, gave up 5 catches for 47. Gilbert, 2 for 29. And then they didn't even come at Pierre Desir but 1 time for 9 yards.
Yeah,
But the young guys did a fine job.
They did do a fine job. But the guy that I pointed out all week, and that's why I asked the question to Jeff Hobson yesterday from Bengals.com when we had him, is the emergence of Tyler Eifert, having him healthy, you know, having him be productive. And I believe you even talked about it, to go back and watching, you know, your videos post-game, is they've got the threats out wide. Actually, no, I'm sorry, it was Mike Patton. They've got the threats out wide, you know, when A.J. Green, Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, and those guys that can make plays, and Dalton has been delivering the football to them over his career, and they've been successful, but now you give him that inside threat, and I thought that inside threat is what we missed yesterday, because they had their nose on Barnage, and he was making contested catches in tight windows, and if we could have just taken those opportunities to get the football, as I said, check the ball down to Duke Johnson. I like our chances with him and a guy in space, you know, time and time again, just to get a first down, just to get some confidence and chew up that clock.
And listen, it was a sluggo on Tremont Williams. I thought Tashawn Gibson struggled to score. The Browns have now given up 5 touchdowns. Two of the touchdowns, I'm sorry, came on Tremont Gibson. The Browns have now given up 5 touchdowns to tight ends in the last 2 weeks alone. A lot to be puzzled with. And I'll go, here's one more stat that really jumped out at me when I was combing through it. On passes between 10 and 19 yards in the air, which is the intermediate passing game, which is where that's wide receiver routes. That's where your wide receivers have to win.
Yep.
1 of 10. Johnny was 1 of 10 with 5 dropped passes.
That doesn't help.
5 dropped passes. You can't have that. You can't have that in the NFL. You cannot have 5 dropped passes as a team in a game. 3 of them from Gabriel. Last week there were 4 dropped passes from Brian Hartline, including 1 huge one on a 3rd down. You can't do that. This Browns team cannot make those kind of mistakes. We're seeing mental errors. We're seeing perhaps errors of you know, putting people in positions that are difficult for them to succeed in, like, for example, Armani Bryant on Marvin Jones. So you can't have the physical errors on top of that. This team is just not going to be able to overcome those things, and that's why you've seen 3 straight losses by 14 or more points. That's not easy to do in the NFL.
No, it's not.
Things are not good right now, and this team's got 10 days to figure it out and try to get some good positive tapes in their mouth going into Pittsburgh so that they can have some kind of momentum coming out of this bye week, because another loss, and you're just looking at yourself and you're saying, what's going on here with this team? It's not good right now. It is not good right now. There were some positives coming out of the game, but those positives, as we've heard, there are no moral victories, and this team right now is searching for many, many more answers than they have. There are many more questions right now than this team has the answers to on the test. When we come back, 216-578-0850, you guys, I'm sure, have plenty of reaction. If my Twitter's any indication, none too pleased out there in the Dog Pound today. We also will hear from Johnny Manziel from the podium after last night's game at 145, Jim Donovan, the voice of the Cleveland Browns, at 2 o'clock, and we'll also hear from Mike Pettine. If we get to any of the telecom conference stuff. If that happens before today, we will try to get those on the air for you as well. Plus, we'll have the Kia in, and we'll have some game predictions on Friday for the rest of this weekend. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Watch the game, then react on the Kissling, Nestico, and Reddick Kings Court Postgame Show, presented by Sunnyside Audi, after Cavs games on ESPN 850 WKNR.